I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. It's Midday on the Arts. The Baltimore Symphony Orchestra is acclaimed around the world. And as the largest arts organization in the state of Maryland, it holds a place of particular importance to the cultural vitality of the Mid-Atlantic region. Right now, the BSO is at a crossroads. After months of negotiations, management and musicians have been unable to agree on a new contract. BSO management has said that the current model of a full-time 52-week contract is unsustainable, and they've proposed reducing salaries and shortening the season. If that happens, can the BSO retain its world-class reputation? Today on Midday, management and musicians will each present their vision for the BSO moving forward. Plus, Seamus Miller and Gregory Burgess of the Chesapeake Shakespeare Company talk about one of the Bard's great history plays, Henry IV. First, the news. Music of Maurice Ravel, his famous Bolero. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Bolero is one of the pieces on the program this weekend in concerts by the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. Today on Midday, it's Midday on the Arts. A little later in the show, I'm going to speak with Seamus Miller and Gregory Burgess, two actors in a new production of Henry IV at the Chesapeake Shakespeare Company. But we begin today with a conversation about the future of the BSO. The orchestra enjoys an excellent international reputation, and on stage they continue to play beautifully and audiences continue to respond enthusiastically. Off stage, however, there is deep disagreement between the BSO management and the musicians about the future direction of the state's largest arts organization. Negotiations on a new labor agreement between players and management began last year. The last contract expired in September. It was extended until the 15th of last month. The orchestra has been playing without a contract since that time as negotiations continue. Today, we will hear from both the management and the players about their vision for the BSO. Joining me now in the studio is the president and CEO of the Baltimore Symphony, Peter Chomey, who was appointed to that position 2 years ago, and Tanya McBride Robles. She is the BSO's vice president and general manager, appointed to that post in 2016. It's good to see you both. Welcome.
Oh, good afternoon.
Thank you.
And listeners, we are not going to be taking phone calls. You are welcome to send us tweets and emails so I have a sense of what's on your mind. You can ping us on the WYPR Facebook page, where we are streaming our conversations. Our email address, midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And full disclosure, I was the music director of the Baltimore Choral Arts Society for 35 years, and in that capacity, I was hired as a guest conductor by BSO management. The Choral Arts Chorus was hired by management to perform with the orchestra, and I hired many members of the BSO to perform on choral arts concerts. Many administrators and players have been friends of mine for a long time. So, Peter Chomey, let me ask you to just outline and dig a little deep into what your vision for the BSO moving forward is, because you have made a proposal that a lot of people feel is a pretty radical departure from its present circumstances.
Well, Tom, we appreciate being with you today and talking about the Baltimore Symphony. And as most of your listeners are aware, we're in discussions with our musicians as we work together toward a new contract. And as you mentioned, the Baltimore Symphony is the state of Maryland's largest arts organization, and we all share the common goal of ensuring our community is home to an exceptional orchestra for many years to come. There are a few things I'd like to share as we begin our conversation today, and that's that we're continuing to perform concerts as negotiations continue. That's important. You mentioned we have concerts coming up this weekend. We also continue to talk with our musicians and work toward a long-term agreement. And we're continuing to communicate with friends of the BSO. There are many people who care deeply about our orchestra and its programs that serve our community.
Well, what do you see the BSO looking like down the road? Because you have put a proposal on the table to the musicians to reduce the contract from its current 52-week status to a 40-week status. What does that mean? What is the reason for that?
Well, we share many common goals and a shared perspective on a number of things. So a few examples, and as we address that question, we share that goal of keeping our orchestra strong for many years to come. We also share a deep love for music. I was a professional oboist for many years, and greatly admire the superb artistry of our musicians. And Tanya was a musician as well. And we also share a strong desire to really forge consensus and work together toward agreement.
Why does the orchestra need to perform for only 40 weeks instead of the current 52-week contract?
And under our proposal, a number of things would not change. The number of concerts that we perform each year would not change. And in addition to that, the scope of our education programs would not change. This proposal has been made related to some financial challenges that we've had over the years.
And Tanya Robles, let me ask you to explain how that is. If you take 12 weeks off of the season, it's a 52-week season, if you go 52 to 40 weeks, how is it that the number of concerts doesn't change? What does change in a 40-week season in terms of the schedule and people's access to the orchestra?
Sure. Well, as Peter mentioned, we would still have a robust schedule of classical, pops, education, movie with orchestra programs. So the impact on our subscribers would be minimal. But currently, our proposal decreases total work weeks, as you mentioned, from 52 to 40 weeks. But the annual paid vacation for musicians is currently 9 weeks with additional generous time off. So our proposal would decrease paid vacation to 4 weeks, which would save over $1 million annually.
And Peter Chomey, there are currently 14 orchestras across the United States that do have full 52-week seasons. Of the top 21 orchestras, and those are ranked by the sizes of their budgets, the budget of the BSO is about, $26.3 million, something like that. Seven of those have seasons that are less than 52 weeks. For example, if a 40-week season had been in place last year, the 2017-18 season, would the deficit that the BSO encountered had been, would that have been a problem? Would that have been eliminated?
Under our proposal, the deficit would have been greatly reduced or eliminated. You know, there are some very encouraging signs right now. And we've had, unfortunately, substantial financial losses going back for more than a decade. I'd like to talk briefly about the encouraging signs we're seeing right now, but then put it in that broader context of the losses that we've had over many years. So right now, if we look at last year, it was the strongest financial results that we've had in 5 years. That's good. It was still a loss of between $500,000 and $600,000. But that compares to having lost $3.5 million a few years ago, then 1.8 million 2 years ago, and then that improvement to $500,000 last year.
And by lost, we're talking about spending $3.5 million 5 years ago more than you took in revenue from ticket sales and from donations from corporations and individuals.
Yes, essentially that's right. And so we've seen this tremendous improvement, and at the same time, we have had substantial losses. So if we think about what's happening right now, our ticket sales are the strongest they've been in several years. They're actually up 4% versus last year. We're encouraged by that. But we also know that ticket sales cover about a third of our costs. And that is why philanthropic support from individuals, corporations, and foundations is so important. That's why our endowment is so important, not only now, but also for future generations. And in addition, the very generous support from the state of Maryland, from our city, and from a number of counties. Without the support of all of those people, we would not have the nationally recognized orchestras that we have today. And we're working very hard to drive growth in revenues, in ticket sales, in contributions, and to increase the endowment. And at the same time, with the continued losses that we've had over a long period of time, making changes to address those financial issues it has felt to be necessary, and that's resulted in the proposal that we've made.
And Tanya Robles, having ticket sales cover about a third of your revenue is not at all uncommon. That's pretty common for theater companies, for museums, for you name it. In the arts world, that's not at all unusual. There are currently, as I understand it, 77 players in the orchestra. There are 61 administrators, so there's a few more players than there are administrators. If you're going to cut the players' payroll by about 20%, do you anticipate a cut in the administrative staff as well?
I'd like to address compliment, and I think Peter could cover the administrative question that you've asked. But as far as what we call
a compliment, you mean the number of people playing in the band.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So we know that the number of musicians has been a great concern to the orchestra, and we share that concern. So currently there are 79 full-time musicians, which includes several members who are on leave, as well as our two librarians. Financial issues have made it difficult to have the number of musicians on stage that we all desire.
What is that number?
It depends on who you talk to, but
I'm
it's
talking to
you. more than 79. I have some breaking news for you, though. We're going to announce today that we have hired three new violinists, some of whom will start this season and one will start next season, and a new assistant principal flute. So we'll be announcing that later today because it is vitally important to what we do artistically.
So that will then get the complement up to 81?
So it would be 83 by next season.
Mm-hmm. And with the deficits, Peter Chomey, these problems aren't new. As you mentioned, you've been incurring deficits on an annual basis for at least a decade, if not longer. Your large donors, the large individual donors, we'll leave public financing and public support to the side for the moment. Are they telling you that they think that this is a good idea? Are they insisting on this? Are they happy with this proposal? Are they opposed? What's their situation?
There are many people who care deeply about the BSO who are concerned about the losses that we've incurred over the last decade. And it goes back further than that. Back in 2006, we had incurred losses and had about $12 million in debt. And at that time, our endowment was restructured. And we took $22 million out of the endowment, paid down that debt, and then had $10 million in unrestricted cash. So that was supposed to be a fresh start back in 2006. And unfortunately, over the years, as the losses continued, that cash was spent and we've had to borrow. So major donors who want to make sure that we have an exceptional orchestra not only today but also for future generations have asked us to do everything that we can to strengthen the business model. And that is not only on the revenue side but also carefully managing costs and getting to that balance. And it's certainly a challenge, and I understand why the proposal that we made is disappointing. And at the same time, we want to find a way to move forward together.
Some folks have suggested that you could draw down from that endowment more aggressively than you are currently drawing. In other words, you could use more of that source of revenue to fund your yearly operations. What's your thought about that?
Well, the members of the endowment trust have said that their view is, and this is in line with how endowments are generally managed, that endowments are intended to help sustain an orchestra not only in the near term but also for the long term. So our annual draw is 5.75% right now, and that's higher than what a lot of experts recommend. And I understand the perspective that some people wish that we could draw from the endowment, and at the same time, that is something that our endowment trust just does not view that's in line with their fiduciary responsibilities.
And Tanya Robles, when it comes to this notion of the BSO being a world-class orchestra, what do you see as the connection, the lineage between being one of those 14 full-time orchestras, 52-week orchestras, and the reputation for world class? Is that a vital element to that reputation?
Well, as part of preparing our proposal, we of course looked at other orchestras who have gone through similar challenges and have similar budget sizes. So we examined St. Louis, Detroit, Atlanta. I think the connection to a world-class reputation involves touring, recording, and broadcasting. And those three orchestras that I cited are doing all of those things. They're winning Grammy Awards. They're touring internationally. Detroit is a model for innovative broadcasting practices. So they're thriving, and they're not considered regional or part-time orchestras. Peter, so we're not the first orchestra to face this challenge and try and find a way to sustain the organization through these kinds of cuts. And I don't want to interrupt, but we've not clarified. The majority of the reduction in weeks is in the summer season. So when we talk about subscriber impact for classical pops and education, it's the majority of what we're talking about would impact summer.
Okay, and how much of the summer? Right now, the orchestra doesn't perform throughout the month of August and the first couple of weeks of September, and then there's, mm-hmm. you know, a week of Christmas, Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. et cetera. What would the summer look like under this proposal, and how would it differ from what the summer looks like currently?
We want to continue to do things like the Independence Day concert at Oregon Ridge and some of the other important community events during the summer. So it would just be shortening those activities.
And let me go back to the notion of administrative cuts. Again, 79, maybe 8 by next year, 83 members of the orchestra, 61 or so members of the administrative staff. With a shortened season, does that mean you need fewer people to run the railroad?
And that's something that we look at. And at the same time, we've already taken steps. So I'll give you an example. Administrative compensation is already 9% below where it was 10 years ago. So you have a group of people who are working very hard to help support our great musicians. We need to have a strong staff to help sustain the organization. We need to have people who are working to raise money, working to sell tickets, and assure operational excellence, and in turn, then that supports artistic excellence.
Move to Strathmore Hall, we're running out of time, I want to make sure I can mention this part. The move to Strathmore Hall in Bethesda, to do some of your concerts there as well as at the Meyerhof, was touted when Strathmore was built as opening up a new market of fundraising possibilities as well as, concert goers. Has that been the case? I mean, do you have a larger contingent of, donors from Montgomery County and that end of the state?
So having Strathmore as our second home has helped greatly. And at the same time, we know there is additional opportunity there, not only in selling tickets, but also in raising money. I want to come back to a point that you made earlier, and just to reinforce that administrative compensation today, we have already taken it to a point where it is 9% below where it was 10 years ago. I want to make sure that's not lost on listeners today. But as far as Strathmore goes, we certainly have additional opportunity there. We are the only orchestra with two homes all year round, and it's a superb hall, and so is the Meyerhof. Both the Meyerhof and Strathmore are concert halls that many orchestras would be very glad to have.
And as we finish up, Tonya, Peter mentioned that administrative costs are 9% lower. I'm hearing from folks that the salaries of musicians have also stayed pretty stagnant for much of the last 10 years, even 12 years. What's your thought about that and where that would go? Obviously, that's going to go even further down if this proposal is agreed on.
That's correct. We're all here for the music. That's what that is our shared vision and love for this organization. So yes, the average annual salary in this proposal would decrease by 17%, and we understand that that's significant. In our proposal in the first year, that would be $74,000 per year, in addition to very generous health benefits. But our proposal has an increase in the scale of 5%. Over the 5 years of the proposal.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have. I appreciate both of you coming in, and we wish you luck in the future. Hope this all works out somehow.
Well, thank you, Tom.
Thank you very much.
Peter Chomey is the president and CEO of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. Tonya Robles is the BSO's vice president and general manager. Coming up, we hear from two players in the orchestra, the percussionist Brian Prechtel and the English horn player Jane Marvine. Join me after this quick break. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Stay with us. Music of Franz Liszt, his first piano concerto. The pianist Konrad Tau will join the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra tomorrow night and Sunday afternoon playing this popular piece on a program that also includes music of Ravel and Berlioz. If you're just joining us today, we're talking about the future of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. We spent the first part of the program talking with members of the BSO management, and now we turn to two musicians who play in the orchestra. Brian Prechtel has been a percussionist with the symphony since 2003. He is the co-chair of the Players' Committee. Jane Marvine plays English horn. She's also a terrific oboe player. She joined the BSO in 1978, and she also serves on the Players Committee. Welcome to you both. It's good to see you.
Great to be here, Tom. Nice to see you.
Thanks, Tom.
And a reminder, we are not taking any calls today. We are keeping an eye on tweets and emails, and we are streaming our conversation on the WIPR Facebook page. And once again, full disclosure, in my position as music director of the Baltimore Choral Arts Society, it's a job I left 2 years ago. I work closely with both the administration and many musicians in the orchestra, including the two who are here in Studio A. So, Brian Prechtl, let's talk about your vision for what the symphony should be, what it should look like, and what it should what it can contribute to the cultural life of the community moving forward.
Well, it's clear that we have a real gem here in our Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. It was established in 1916 as really part of the city and was supported, unlike any other orchestra, in that first effort, and then reorganized a bit later. But it's an incredible institution that is the highlight of arts in this city. And we believe as such, we need to be the most visionary of all of the organizations, and we should be serving the community and bringing music of transcendent quality every week of the year.
And how important to that goal, to that mission, is the fact that the symphony needs to remain a 52-week full-time orchestra, as we mentioned in the first part of the program, one of 14 currently in the United States?
I think it's essential. I came from a regional orchestra before I came to the Baltimore Symphony, and it was a great orchestra. I played at a couple of those, but it's a different animal. I mean, many of those people have other jobs that they have to devote either most of their day to, or if they, teach on the side. And they play beautiful concerts, but they play far fewer of them. And the institution itself is not capable of serving a city the size of Baltimore with the needs that a city like Baltimore has.
And Jay Marvine, you've been around for a long time. You've been part of this band for 40-plus years.
40 wonderful years.
Yeah, and you have been on the Players Committee and been involved in many negotiations and many contracts in years past. What's different this time around? Back in the 1980s, when I first came to town, the longest strike at that time ever in the history of U.S. orchestras was a Baltimore Symphony strike over, a contract negotiation. There's no talk of striking now or locking out now, I'm happy to report. But financial problems have, been part and parcel of this arts organization and many arts organizations for a long time. From your perspective, what's different this time around?
From my perspective, what's different this time is that we are not engaging in the right dialogue. We're not having the right conversation about how to meet the challenges that we're facing right now. There are actually 17 52-week orchestras. It is a defining characteristic to attract great players and to keep great players. Musicians are training and staying in shape and preparing for their performances almost every single day of the year. I can't tell you how many musicians that tell me they can't take a vacation or they can't do this or that because they have to have their instrument with them. They can't. I know our concertmaster told me he doesn't take one day off.
In terms of practicing and stuff. I mean, playing, even if he has days where he's not playing it.
That
concert.
Dedication needs a paycheck for 52 weeks. The question we should be having is, how do we take the orchestra as a resource for 52 weeks and service our communities, service our state, create more revenue earning possibilities, mentor, develop relationships within the community, strengthen the fabric of our community, be relevant to our community. And that's the conversation we should be having. In addition to that, I think we should be looking at how we control expenses in our organization. The Baltimore Symphony exists to perform great music, and that great music takes excellence. In order to keep excellence at the peak level, we have to make sure that we have a contract with wages, benefits, working conditions that is commensurate with the other fine ensembles in the country.
And Brian Prechtl, give us some examples of how the orchestra, in your view, can resonate with the community, connect with the community in better ways. The kinds of revenue opportunities that Jane alludes to that could be talked about.
The first revenue opportunity that we need to talk about is something that we have been raising lately. And if you go to bsomusicians.org, you'll see at the top of our page, there is a take action button. Click on that, and it'll take you to a page where you can ask your legislators to restore public funding to the levels that the BSO enjoyed before the recession. Because actually, if you look at the numbers, we are down almost $1.5 million in public funding from 2007. Right there is just about the amount of money that the management is talking about having a shortfall each year. So it seems kind of a no-brainer. Let's start with getting more income into this organization. And then we should be doing all of the things that we took time in our recent strategic planning process to enact. We need to be out in the community. We need to be serving in all of the neighborhoods. I spend a lot of time in West Baltimore in our Orchids program. And that's an area that we could do so much more in. I don't think we are as visible as we should be in the summer. Even now, I think we have Artscape, the largest arts festival in the world here, and the 4th of July. I mean, I just don't understand why we would close up shop when all of Baltimore comes out to play in the summer.
Let's talk about public funding. In 2007, the orchestra received $2.8 million. This is according from the Maryland Citizens for the Arts. That included $750,000 as a special fund injection. That wasn't your normal grant from the Maryland State Arts Council. And in 2019, the current fiscal year, your grant is $2.6 million. So you're right. There's a couple million dollars difference. It has been as low as, $1.7 million, right in the middle of the recession, 2009. The Maryland State Arts Council funds all of the arts throughout the entire state. So if the BSO funding all of a sudden jumped up $1.5 million or $2 million, where does that come from? Does that mean that other arts organizations, the BMA, the Center Stages, the Everymans of the world, the arts organizations in other parts of the state are cut? Where does the money come from?
No, I don't think so. I think that there are enough people that care about what we're doing here that I think as the Baltimore Symphony rises, all of the arts organizations, all of the interest and all of the support for those organizations will rise as well. I think we have a quirky, artistic city here, and I think we have a lot of interest in supporting the arts. And we also have one of the richest states in the country who's been very supportive of arts. This is the moment to ask them, what do they want? And I think that you'll hear, as we're hearing, that people want a great orchestra in this city, just like we want a great baseball team and we want a great football team and we want great museums. All of those things are important to great cities.
And Jane, let's touch again on a point you just raised about attracting good players and attracting the kinds of players that can keep the level of the performances at a high level of artistic excellence. Do you think that it's a problem that if this was a 40-week orchestra and the pay scale was what Tanya Robles has just alluded to, where a starting base salary for a new player would be something like $74,000 a year with essentially most of the summer off, is that going to mean that the people taking auditions to get the jobs, the next jobs in the Baltimore Symphony, we're going to see a lower level of player? Do you think that?
There's no question that we will see a lower level and we will lose players. And we are continuing to lose players because the more orchestras that offer better contracts and more opportunities, the more chances for our great players to go somewhere else. And we have retirements. So I would take issue with what was mentioned about the current proposal. This year in their proposal, they're proposing by not having 12 weeks in the summer to bring us back to a level of the salary of 2001. And in 5 years, we go back to a level of 2002. We're already 20% behind. Can you imagine
and
now?
And we're behind who?
Our peer orchestras.
And they are?
Well, I think I gave you this sheet, Tom. You can look at it. We should probably post it. We'll post it on bsomusicians.org. But you can see a graph there that shows Baltimore, St. Louis, Detroit, Houston, Pittsburgh, Dallas, Cincinnati, Minnesota, Cleveland, and the National Symphony. Look, just down the road in the Kennedy Center is the National Symphony. They're paying $146,432 as base pay. Okay, that's not quite double what we pay here, but we are just as good of an orchestra. And so you have to understand, we exist in a marketplace. And if a player coming out of school, a top player, is going to consider where they're going to go, you know, I'm sorry, but you have to be realistic about that. And you have to realize how many fewer players would be considering Baltimore a destination orchestra, a place you want to go and a place you want to stay, if you're going to suddenly slash the salary by 20%.
Because there are those who are saying, look, orchestras all over the country are struggling. I mean, how many other opportunities, how many, are there really a plethora of really great opportunities for other people to abandon ship here in Baltimore and move? I mean, it seems like the pool of orchestras that are going to be able to pay really competitive salaries is not expanding, it's shrinking.
Well, I'm not sure I would agree with that. I think there is success in the rest of the country, as evidenced by the settlements that the other orchestras have been getting, which have been progressive settlements. And even the two of the orchestras that have a reduced number of weeks make substantially more than
I think we're talking about Atlanta and St. Louis.
No, we're talking about St. Louis and Detroit.
Detroit. Mm-hmm.
I mean, Tom, this is the state of Maryland, one of the richest states in the union here, and this is a fantastic city. We have two major markets with two fantastic concert halls. We have three outdoor venues right in close proximity. We have Oregon Ridge with a 40-year history. We have Pier 6 right in the heart of our tourist destination. And we have Meriwether Post, which is now publicly owned by the county, Howard County. It seems just fathomable that we can't create just a wonderful set of experiences for our citizens in the summer. We think we should use that time to reach out to other parts of the state. We've had success in the past with having a block party atmosphere, with food trucks, with showing movies, video games, Brandenburg concertos, pre and post chamber music concerts. All kinds of ideas are possible, and we can go out and ask for funding. We can find donors who want to support that. You know, we can't take a great orchestra for granted. We lost the Baltimore Opera. I mean, every little piece of this puzzle has to be put together so carefully so we don't lose the incredible world-class symphony that we have built here over the last 100 years.
The folks in management would also perhaps suggest that with 12 weeks off in the summer, players would have the option to and the opportunity to play summer festivals, you know, to take freelance work for that big chunk of time. It's kind of like teachers who teach school who, you know, also work during the summer.
Well, as Jane said before, you have to keep your playing in tip-top shape. I actually play at a summer music festival. I have one of the greatest summer music festivals in the world, I would say, the Grand Teton Music Festival. Mm-hmm. It pays about $430 a week. Okay, so imagine trying to make a living on that kind of money. Imagine trying to pay your bills. That's not a way that you can sustain your own income. And also, I'm very lucky. It's almost impossible to find a summer music festival these days. You know, these are the people that are making this orchestra the great orchestra it's been. Let's not forget, we've had 8 international tours, 36 Carnegie Hall appearances, 62 commercial recordings, 3 Grammy Awards. I mean, this orchestra has a storied history. You won't get that in a regional orchestra. You just won't. I was in a regional orchestra. We didn't do any of those things. An orchestra like this needs to remain aspirational. It needs to get people excited about its vision for the future. And unfortunately, what we're hearing and the kind of sky is falling sort of mentality is something that no one's going to get excited about. We got to get this turned around, and we look forward to moving alongside the management and pulling in the same direction.
Tom, we need support from our community. This organization is too precious to lose, and we really need citizens who care about great music and keeping this great institution to take some action, to go to bsomusicians.org. There's a simple click on the action button. Let your legislators know that this is important to you and to help us find a solution that doesn't destroy the orchestra in order to save it.
There's a lot of talk about how orchestras across the country need to reinvent themselves, that classical music, like any other, many, many other industries, has changed dramatically. I mean, the post office acts in a very different way now that FedEx and UPS, et cetera, you know, have been ensconced in the American psyche. Are there things about the mission of the orchestra? I mean, you mentioned Orchids, and, you know, Brian, you've been given awards for your work with Orchids. Orchids, is that a moneymaker? I mean, or...
Not necessarily, but it's important. And I have to say, the Baltimore Symphony has been leading the way in terms of being open to different avenues that we could serve. Our Pulse concerts are groundbreaking. I think Orchids is...
Those are the concerts that involve pop bands.
Yeah, indie bands playing alongside with us. The BSO Academy, which is an incredible program that was developed so that people who used to play instruments could come here and dust off those old instruments. I mean, these people's lives have been completely changed. And I think if I was looking on social media right now, I know that there would be many of those that are sending messages because this is very important to them. That's one of those things we do in the summer. And suddenly, where would that be? So I think we've already been an orchestra that has demonstrated the ability to be inventive and to be open to serving this community as well as we could. And that's one of the key elements. Jane, you have some thoughts there?
Well, I want to single out the Academy as being an outstanding example of an orchestra doing something that is creative. It's out-of-the-box thinking. Our music director, Maren Alsop, wanted to connect with community musicians, adult avocational musicians, and this is the 10th anniversary, and we should be celebrating.
Is it scheduled for the summer of 2019?
We are hoping that the management will make a commitment to schedule this summer and celebrate the 10th anniversary.
Very quickly, Brian, we just have 15 seconds left. People wonder about Maren Alsop's posture in all of this. What can you tell us about that?
She has already expressed her support for maintaining a 52-week orchestra and of the fact that that's the direction we need to get behind. She said that to the board. She said it to me personally. I don't think there's any doubt that the first female conductor of a major orchestra does not want to preside over its being dismantled.
Brian Prechtl is a percussionist with the BSO and the co-chair of the Players Committee of the Baltimore Symphony Musicians. Jane Marvin has been with the BSO since 1978. She plays English horn, and she also serves on the Players Committee. Thanks to you both, and good luck.
Thanks, Tom.
The BSO will perform music of Berlioz, Liszt, and Ravel tomorrow night at the Strathmore Hall in Bethesda and Sunday afternoon at the Meyerhoff here in Baltimore. We've got a link to ticket information on our website, wipr.org/midday. Quick break. When we come back, two actors playing lead roles in Chesapeake Shakespeare Company's new production of The Bard's Henry IV. I'm Tom Hall. Stick around.